Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer. Big show for you. The midweek edition previewing LSU coming at you a little bit early with an afternoon edition of the Talking Tide podcast. Rare afternoon edition. I'm being accommodated by my co-host here and certainly appreciate that so I can get away for other matters this evening. But been a while since we last convened, Travis, of course, with the Ida week. It's been 10 days since we recapped that harrowing Alabama road win over South Carolina. And now they turn to an LSU Tigers team and program and athletic department that's in a bit of turmoil going into this game.
Upside down right now in Red Stick is the best way I know how to put that. You talk about the issues Alabama has had on the football field throughout the season, still just a one-loss team. Pale in comparison to what has been going on at LSU. We've got an interim situation headed to Tuscaloosa with Frank Wilson. Man, that's across the league now. You've got a quarter of the league right now in interim situations. And, Chase, this isn't just like one of those situations of the past where it's one or two games, you know, where you might have an interim. Arkansas, you've had an interim for more than half the season, or going to have it for more than half the season. Florida is going to be similar in terms of that. And now LSU, Auburn, you know, moving forward, it is interim season in the league where it just means a little bit more, Chase.
You know, I dug back, speaking of interim coaches, for a notebook lead this week on what Alabama has done against them historically. And, of course, you know, that's a tough dig now, right? Because you're not only talking about a program in Alabama that's been around for 122 years, but you're trying to figure something out about the other team for all that time, right? But I only came up with six instances of Alabama playing against an interim coach. 6-0 has been the Crimson Tide in those games. The first one being when they took on a Bill Oliver-led Auburn team, I believe, in 1998, and then five since then. But, you know, one of the things I realized and noted kind of in researching that a little bit is just how relatively new the interim era is, because for decades in college football, there was kind of a gentleman's agreement between athletic directors and coaches that you're going to finish the season for better or worse. And then a decision will be made. And that started to crack and that started to crack, I want to say, around the 90s, maybe, right? And then now it's completely out the window.
Yeah, DJ Durkin, I said this earlier on a radio show in the state, if there's an all-SEC interim team, DJ Durkin might be the head coach because he's done it at Florida. Now he's going to do it at Auburn. You know, he's got a couple of those in his cap at this point. But you're right. It was at least implied going into a lot of the season ending games like the Iron Bowl, like Florida State, you know, those type of games. This is probably it for this coach. And in some instances you win interim in those final games, but man, just again, the longevity, that we're seeing with some of these and going ahead and getting jump on things, right? You know, trying to, I guess, get a better idea of who you might be able to get and also how that's going to impact your roster. Cause you have to take into account the transfer portal now and everything else. It is crazy.
Defense for LSU hadn't been so much of a problem as the offense, Travis. They've got the sixth rank. Now, it hadn't been fantastic, but it's the sixth best in the SEC in scoring defense. I think they're giving up 18, 19 a game and scoring offense, though. I think they're 12th in the league, around 25 points a game. They just the offensive line has not come together, Travis. LSU, you may recall, last year had a really stout offensive line. And they placed both of their starting offensive tackles last year were top 100 picks in the NFL draft. Will Campbell went in the first round, but also they had a couple guards go late in the draft too. And so they come back this year with essentially a brand new offensive line. And it just, for the most part, has not worked out, at least certainly nowhere near to the standard of last year.
No, it hasn't. And that's been a bit of a surprise. But you did know LSU, in terms of skill people, was bringing back a lot. Caden Durham at the running back position. You bring in Harlan Berry as a very highly regarded running back as a 1-2 punch. Nussmeier, obviously, Tre'Davious Green, a real problem in terms of matchups at 6'7 and how they can line him up. And that'll be an interesting storyline for this week, how Alabama goes about defending that guy. Aaron Anderson, Berrion Brown had come in from the transfer portal. Lot of skill talent, but you're right. Up front, they just have not been good enough week in and week out. Xavier Thomas, another guy from a skill perspective. So it'll be interesting to see if Alabama can take advantage of that situation from the defensive side for Alabama. And for LSU defensively, they went out and spent some jack on that defense too. And I hear what you're saying. I thought early in the season, like the opener at Clemson, Blake Baker and what he put out there in that game on the road, you felt like, wow, this defense is really going to be upgraded. Seems to have slipped as the season has gone on. But, boy, Harold Perkins, you're still going to have to deal with. A.J. Halsey, the safety that came in from Houston, maybe the best corner in the league, and Mansoor Delane. And you wonder about Whit Weeks, right, this week. Is his availability going to be something that benefits LSU, or are they going to have to continue to try to work around that for a second or third week, it seems like?
Yeah, kind of a change in tone from LSU on Whit Weeks. Last week, I believe Frank Wilson said that Weeks looked like he was well on his way to being able to play against Alabama. But then I think today he said he's doubtful and hadn't practiced this week. And so that being the case, you wonder if he does go, will he even be himself, right? Will he even be 100%? Usually, you know, when you're doubtful midweek, you don't practice midweek and you give it a go. Sometimes, so I've seen situations where a team would have just been better off playing a healthy number two than running a starter out there who's too gimpy.
Yeah, and typically at a place like LSU, you've got guys from a depth perspective. Now, you know, Witt's brother West, he's been a starter throughout the season at the other spot. But Devon Keys is another younger linebacker that's played a lot for LSU. Harold Perkins can be used in some different ways. So I think intangibly you might miss Whit Weeks as much as anything else. Alabama really took advantage of him in this game a year ago. You know, I don't anticipate that being the case if he does go for a second straight season. But I hear you on Wilson and kind of how that has downgraded, it's felt like, since last week, because earlier in this week it was questionable. Now it's sounding doubtful. That's not a bad thing for Alabama.
No, definitely not. Weeks, an inside linebacker and kind of a heart and soul guy. But like you said, there's a lot of talent around him defensively. Seems like Perkins has been there forever, doesn't it? I certainly did have him pegged early in his career as a three and out kind of guy.
Yeah,
he's certainly a three and out caliber athlete. There's no question about that. But he has stuck around, made a big difference for that defense. He's hard to block. He's hard to deal with. And it's going to be something watching him play. He's got, 33 tackles on the season, broken up three passes, two sacks. He's fumble recovery. He's all over the field.
Brought in Jack Pyburn as one of those defensive ends. Pyburn comes over from Florida after leaving the Gators a year ago. You know, he's a guy that you feel like your tackles ought to be able to deal with in the pass rush. But after the South Carolina game, I think the concerns are renewed for Alabama in terms of protection with those tackles. So Perkins is a guy that they can use in ways that they bring him off that edge as well. So for this Alabama offensive line, I know it's been a big part of what you guys have talked to Ryan Grubb and also Kalen about early in the week, the run game. And that's important because if they continue to struggle to run the football, they're going to be in those obvious pass situations where it's more likely to have your tackles exposed than not.
To whatever extent Ryan Grubb uses those early scripted plays offensively week to week to just gauge and assess, all right, are we going to be able to get it done running the ball in this game or not? You see him turn pretty quickly to the quick game passing wise when it's not there for the running game. But also there's not a total abandonment of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because even in games where we've seen Alabama run the ball poorly, we've seen them run the ball decent late. So I tip my hat to Grubb for not abandoning the running game totally. And of course, as good a year as Alabama has had, it's played with some leads. So it's not like it's been faced with a lot of situations where, you know, it's been way down and needs to make a huge comeback. That has happened here and there, not a lot, but definitely Grubb, I think, is a guy who can effectively adjust to struggles in the run game.
Yeah, there's times where it feels a little bit like vintage Spurrier when he was at Florida, throw it early to run it late or do some different things early to kind of, you know, get defenses off of just setting dead red on your fastball. And that is exactly what Grubb has done. He has done a good job, in my opinion, for someone who doesn't really have the benefit of a legit run game to lean on. Now, some people will say they think some of that goes back to the approach of Ryan Grubb. Maybe he brings some of that on himself. But I tend to think it's more personnel-based than anything else. And he still doesn't allow defenses to get comfortable against Alabama offensively, which speaks to instincts and also preparedness. And you know, you can be prepared. You can have the script. You can do all those things. Script runs out, right, after 15, 20 plays. And you see some of the stuff he dials up late, like he did against South Carolina, tells me he's got a feel and a knack for it, and he's prepared.
No question. Injury-wise for Alabama, Travis, obviously a topic coming off an idle week. You'd expect the Crimson Tide to be healthier. That'll certainly be the case. We know that Lotzer Brooks and Isaiah Horton are back at practice. Brooks didn't play at all against South Carolina. Isaiah Horton played very little against the Gamecocks, and those two appear to be ready to go with no problem. Ask Kalen DeBoer on Monday about a couple other guys, Gino Vandermark, Danny Lewis Jr. Vandermark sounds like he's ready to go. Lewis sounds a little bit more questionable. Not sure we see him against LSU, but Alabama definitely a little bit more healed up, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
And they needed it. And not just guys that they're trying to get back, right? I mean, Jam Miller needed an off week. This is a guy so far this season, he's dealt with a collarbone. He's been in concussion protocol. So it's guys that have been playing, that had been playing going into that South Carolina game and through it, yeah, that you think should appear to have maybe a little bit more in their step coming off the bye week, because there were situations going out of the South Carolina game where you wondered where some of those guys might really be with everything that had happened in the first 7-8 games of the season.
Won't hurt. Didn't hurt. I'm sure it didn't hurt Ryan Williams to have a week off either.
Right.
He's been banged up a little bit too, he's not the biggest, strongest guy in the world. So you know with him, I think sometimes you think about pitch count. I think we've seen a little bit of pitch count on him this year here and there. So
yeah, good for a guy like Tim Keenan too. We forget that he came into the season dealing with an issue, and you got to think that just helps him, you know, get closer to where he would like to be, or would have liked to have been, maybe even going into the season.
Jaden Roberts too, as well. Although Roberts played every snap against South Carolina for the first time this season, so he clearly was as healthy as he's been all year to be able to do that. So I expect we'll see a good bit of Jaden Roberts as well. Defensively for Alabama, injury wise, Quay Rousseau not quite ready to go. Kalen DeBoer was pretty clear that we won't see Quay Rousseau against LSU. But Kane Womack and DeBoer were both asked about Rousseau on Monday, Travis. And what I took from it was that he's pretty damn close. What I took from it was maybe we shouldn't be shocked if Rousseau is able to give it a go against Oklahoma, or at least pretty darn soon after this LSU game.
I had my old translator hat on for those comments from Kane Womack. And when I heard sooner, I thought he's telling us OU.
Right. Yeah.
So I took the sooner for the Boomer Sooners.
Yeah.
And with DeBoer, it was tapped down a little bit in terms of maybe some building excitement, because it'd be great to have Quay Rousseau back. Obviously, if you're going to play four linebackers on the field, like we've seen more of from Kane Womack this year, kind of a 3-4. And I know we talked about Keenan, you asked him about him, I think, and you know how he can play that zero in kind of a 3-4 or some different fronts, some different looks. Boy, to have Quay Rousseau out there with Yanze Pierre, when you wanted to do that, especially against early down runs with Caden Durham and Barry and you know that part of the piece that you got to deal with on Saturday, that would be very, very nice.
That Tim Keenan answer from Kane Womack, I think that might have been the first time I've ever heard the phrase two gap come out of Womack's mouth when he was talking about Tim Keenan and what he can do for him when he's head up on the center.
And because they played some 3-4 this year. Yeah. You know, they had been pretty much – they played dime and 3-4 this year, and that's something they didn't do last year. I mean, they were pretty much 3-3-5, you know, every snap of defense last year. So I don't know who's talked to Kane, or maybe this was something that was in his bag previously, but, you know, there has been some adaptation, some adjustments being made with the personnel they have.
Quarterback-wise in this matchup, Travis, I don't think there's any question. The edge goes to the Crimson Tide with Ty Simpson continuing what could be a Heisman Trophy season. He's been outstanding pretty much week to week ever since that Florida State game. It's been an up-and-down year for Garrett Nussmeier of LSU. I think that aforementioned offensive line and the struggle therein has certainly had something to do with that. But Nussmeier didn't play well against Alabama last year either when the Crimson Tide went to Baton Rouge and came away with a blowout win. This year, he's been less effective, 12 touchdown passes against 5 interceptions. He's been sacked 14 times on the year. Not great average per attempt either. I think that's like 6.8. If you look at the LSU receiving core, I don't think anybody – including that tight end you mentioned, I don't think anybody's averaging even 14 yards per catch.
Yeah, and, you know, they went to the portal for a couple of guys within the league, really three when you go back a few years, to Aaron Anderson, who, of course, was previously at Alabama, but they pilfered Kentucky of a top playmaker and Barry and Brown, Xavion Thomas from Mississippi State, I believe.
Right.
Made that move with him to also help maybe in the kick return game. Green is something else, man. That dude is a strider at 6'7". So red zone, I'm sure they'll be looking to get him matched up in some situations when they have those opportunities. I think if you're Alabama, you're not upset that you don't really have to worry about design quarterback runs this week after dealing with Lenora Sellers.
Yeah.
You kind of know where Garrett Nussmeier is going to be. But don't get it twisted. They still have plenty of guys that can make plays. I'm just interested, too, to see with this interim situation. They didn't just get rid of Kelly. They got rid of Joe Sloan, the offensive coordinator. You know, in a lot of ways, Kane Womack's feeling like he's got to be ready for anything with the changes they made, especially on offense.
Yeah, no question about it. I think if you're Womack, You got to give Green a whole lot of attention. 264 receiving yards for him, by the way, on the season. 4 touchdown catches, which leads the Tigers. But like you said, a hell of a red zone target, as big as he is, just a huge target, big catch radius. And, you know, you and I have kind of lamented how the Wolf has been using this defense a little bit. Maybe that position shouldn't be dropping into coverage quite so much. Maybe keep the Wolf off of Green and just let safeties deal with him, right? That's what I'm thinking.
Well, and, you know, then you're asking Bray Hubbard or Keon Saab to handle that matchup. I think the way Alabama's built defensively should help it in this game, because I don't know if you love a matchup of Deshaun Jones against a 6'7 guy like that. You know, this feels like Kyle Pitts of Florida going into the 2020 SEC championship game. Right. And Malachi Moore and Brian Branch were freshmen in that game. And they got a little bit of a baptism by fire by Pitts, and similar skill set, I think, for, you know, this guy in Green. So yeah, I don't know if I like a true safety on him. I definitely don't like a linebacker, but you know, you gotta, you got to throw what you got at him and hope something sticks. And more than anything, hope that you can get to Nussmeier on a consistent basis because of the issues LSU's had on that offensive line. And also gadget players this week because of Xavion Thomas and even Aaron Anderson can do some of that. I'd be on alert for reverses, anything that makes easy touches for guys like that that don't need a lot of space to make something happen.
Yeah, it's a great comp with Kyle Pitts. I think that's a super analogy. Pitts wore Alabama out when he had that big year with the Gators. Athletic tight ends like that who can basically run like receivers, they're a nightmare for any defensive coordinator. But
they are. And I go back to that 2020 game. I mean, there were times where Brian Branch was in great, great position. It's just the matchup is bad. With a guy like that, there's only so much you can do. So pressure, though, is a great way to combat that, cause problems for the quarterback.
I happen to think that Nussmeier is a lot less effective on the move, too. He's a guy who needs that clean pocket. And that's not to say he's unathletic because he can take off and make some first downs with his legs here and there. But I see a drop off from him accuracy wise. When he's under pressure and leaving the pocket, throwing on the run, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you're right. If Alabama can get some pressure on Nussmeier, get him off the spot, even if you don't sack him, get him on the move, you got a better chance of a positive outcome if he's letting that ball go while his feet have to be while his feet are moving.
Yeah, and LSU has struggled to run the ball consistently. I know we said that a little bit about South Carolina, but again, you don't factor in the quarterback in this run game. This week, you don't factor tempo in. Yeah, those are two things you like right now if you're a defense in 2025. Don't have to worry about design quarterback runs and don't have to really worry about tempo. Or who knows? I've added some change over now offensively. Maybe that's something LSU incorporates. But sure, just it sounds easy enough. Maybe a guy, in a game like this, Keon Keeley, you get some obvious passing situations. Maybe he's a big part of this on Saturday and some of those dime looks that we've seen a lot more of from Alabama in 2025. Maybe some interior guys at James Smith. This is a game. You should be in a great spot to be problematic for this LSU offensive line. LT Overton. Alabama's got guys that are capable of it. I'll give you another one. London Simmons in some passing situations. The true freshman, I think, he's a guy that could – cause some issues in the pass rush on Saturday. They got to get it from more than Yonze Pierre. I guess that's the overriding point.
No doubt about it. All right. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I want to thank our listeners and viewers. Ask you to donate as well to Parker Covers Alabama at parkercoversalabama.com, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired residents of the state of Alabama. Mike Parker, the founder of Crimson Cover Television, which I've been doing for about 15 years now, is the inspiration for this 501c3, and we would appreciate any and all support at parkercoversalabama.com. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, and Travis, let's bump around that Southeastern Conference schedule like we like to do each week. Georgia will be at Mississippi State for an early kickoff. You've got Texas A&M at Missouri midday, LSU, Alabama, of course, Auburn at Vanderbilt. That's another afternoon game. And then your nightcapper opposite the Alabama game, over on the SEC network, is going to be Florida at Kentucky. Thoughts on any of those matchups? Let's start with Auburn and Vanderbilt. What about that one with Auburn coming off a Hugh Freeze ousting right there, going to Nashville?
Yeah, more interim. It's interim season in the Southeastern Conference. I saw that line. I think it's only 6.5, Vandy. Been a stretch for Vandy, too. And traditionally, those type of stretches for a Vanderbilt roster haven't led to good things in the month of November. That's typically where you've seen Vandy feel it and kind of drop off a cliff. I don't think that's going to happen this week, though. I think Vanderbilt gets the job done. I know Auburn defensively is championship caliber. That's the thing about this season for Auburn. They basically lit a match to a championship caliber defense, wasted it. So I expect Auburn to give Diego and that offense some problems for Vandy, kind of maybe like what Missouri was able to do a couple weeks ago. But ultimately, it's impossible for me to pick Auburn in a game like this on the road against a more complete team, and certainly still a team maybe some people are banking on Vanderbilt being, you know, a little bit down after that second loss. Vanderbilt's still in this thing. You know, they can get the 10-2, Chase. They sit back, and if they don't get in, they can bitch, which is about all you can really ask for, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I think they're capable of doing it. I do. I think they win this game like you. I think they get that done at home. Obviously, they've got a game against rival Tennessee at the end of the season that won't be easy, but Tennessee's beatable. We've certainly seen that. Vanderbilt can beat Tennessee, so we'll see what happens there. Speaking of interims, another interim game with the Florida Gators and Billy Gonzalez going to Lexington to take on Kentucky and Mark Stoops. There are reports that Kentucky will part ways with Mark Stoops perhaps at the end of the season. No interim situation at UK just yet, Travis, but definitely two programs not headed in the right direction.
Yeah, that could be a mutual sort of separation there. And you hope it is done with as much grace as possible, because if we're being honest, if there's a coach in Kentucky football lore, and yes, I understand Paul Bear Bryant was one time a coach at Kentucky, that is deserving of something bordering on a statue outside Kroger Field, it's probably Mark Stoops. I mean, to go 8 straight years and just qualify for a bowl like they did from 2016 to 2023, that's unprecedented. And I get it. You know, you go back over the last 16 SEC games, I think it is, Kentucky, even with that win last Saturday at Auburn, is now 2-14 in its last 16.
Right.
So it's probably time. I'm going to go Florida in the game on the road. Just better people, you know, on both sides of the ball. Lagway has regressed this year. But I think there's more I trust even about the Florida offense to get it done. I still think Florida defensively, boy, Auburn is good defensively, but Kentucky was awful in that game. Both of those offenses were terrible.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I like Florida too. Kentucky's defense has certainly played well in spots. They played a good defensive game against Texas. Then again, who hasn't? Right. But of course, Auburn couldn't move the ball on the Wildcats either. But I do think Florida is able to get that done on the road. A&M at Missouri, Travis. It's a ranked versus ranked game. A&M third and Missouri ranked 22nd. Although to me, this thing looks a little bit more lopsided than the naked eye might suggest, because Missouri's down to its third quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've lost two quarterbacks now. And gosh, I just can't see, even at home, I can't see a number three quarterback knocking off an 8-0 A&M squad that's really a pretty complete team.
Yeah. And even when Eli Drinkwitz's teams have been full go, like they were against Alabama just a few weeks ago, they haven't gotten the job done against top 10 type teams. One thing Eli's done a great job of, and one nowadays that'll keep you employed for a considerable amount of time, is beating the teams on your schedule you're supposed to beat. In the last couple of years, Missouri's schedule has been very friendly, even from a conference perspective.
Yes,
I don't think that'll be as much the case in 2026 and beyond. But Matt Zollers, I think, has a very bright future in the SEC as a starting quarterback. He was a highly regarded guy as a recruit. This is a little early for him. I do like that he got considerable action against Vanderbilt and had an opportunity to maybe build some confidence doing that. I think he should have. He played pretty well in that game against Vandy. Then he gets a bye week. So if it were going to happen with your quarterback, that's kind of the best way it could have happened for Missouri. But I'm with you. I think Texas A&M, and, you know, the things that you want to put in your luggage that travel well in the Southeastern Conference, A&M has those things right now. And so hard to envision the Aggies taking their first loss of the season this weekend.
Georgia Bulldogs, an 8.5-point favorite on the road at Mississippi State. Is Mississippi State sleepy dangerous here, Travis, or not? They just won their first SEC game under Jeff Levy. They're decided underdogs and should be. But you know, we've talked about this before. This Georgia offense is a little bit hit or miss. And on the road, it could go to Starkville and be missed for a couple quarters.
It could be. You know, it seems like for Alabama anyway, dealing with an underdog state was always tougher when you had to go over there and play in that damn 8:30 Central game or whatever the hell it used to be. Remember those games?
Yeah, yeah.
In Starkville, it'd be like 8 Central kickoffs.
Yeah.
It didn't feel as much like the 11 a.m. or the 11:30 game was as much of a problem, although, as we've talked about here on the channel in recent weeks, that 2007 Mississippi State-Alabama game, I think that was an early one.
Yes.
That in Nick Saban's first year, that wasn't a good Alabama football team. Georgia's a very good football team. So if I'm Kirby, I like getting over there and getting out of bed and playing football rather than sitting around till 7:38 Central to kick that damn thing off.
Yeah. I think Georgia wins this game going away. I do think that Mississippi State's defense could give Georgia some problems in Starkville, because I don't have a lot of trust in Gunnar Stockton, but I do got a lot of trust that Georgia's going to be able to get it done on the line of scrimmage in this game on both sides.
Yeah, so, and that's the bottom line. It's kind of like one like Florida against Kentucky. Same type of deal. Boy, Georgia has just had some culture wins this season, because you watch them, they're not great. They're not great by Kirby or Georgia standards, but like last week, you know, they're down again in the fourth quarter. They get a third and fourth and short stuff on their end, down three, and then go right down the field 82 yards and rip the hearts out of the Florida Gators. They've done that time and time again. I don't think they're national championship viable this season, but damn, as Kirby has said on multiple occasions, they're hard to kill, man. They are.
Hard to kill, no doubt about it. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to join us for the Sunday Nighter when we reconvene to recap Alabama's upcoming home game against the LSU Tigers. Until then, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll talk to you next time.